Exchanging pigs for school fees not only got him an education, but led Andy Agaba all the way from East Africa to Harvard and MIT. In this episode of our Business and Justice series, Andy shares how his single mother's small businesses set him up for a different life. Now, his mission is to create long-term opportunities for others through business.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Hello and welcome to the Zuwani Podcast, which is a platform for business leaders to share insights and personal experiences on what it means to engage redemptively in their work. This podcast is part of our Business and Justice series. Today we're chatting about taking a long-term view with Andy Agaba, who's founder and CEO at Hinga in Kampala, Uganda, whose mission is to invest in value-driven entrepreneurs to create jobs and transform culture in East Africa. Andy, welcome.
Seems, thank you for having me and greetings from Kampala. What a great opportunity to be here today.
So let's jump straight in, Andy. I know that you are passionate about job creation and entrepreneurship. Will you share with us how your life journey shaped that passion and how that eventually led to the formation of Hinga?
Thank you, Sibs. I think my journey is basically my mother's journey. My mom raised me on her own because my father was killed 2 weeks before I was born. In fact, my name Agaba means God gives and God takes away. So I think in that midst of pain of mom losing the father of her child, the provider, you know, she made sense out of it. She's like, okay, God has taken away the father, but he's given a son instead. But really what that set up for us was a life of struggle where my mom had to like move from town to town and try to make ends meet. So most times she left me with relatives to take care of me where she went to make a little bit of money. But she was tired of that arrangement. So when I was probably around 10, she decided to start a little business. And with, I don't know, savings of about $30 or so in the 90s, she started this little tea shop. You know, she was selling tea and some baked goods. We have food here in Uganda called chapati. I think people in East Africa would know that. And so I was working with her every day, making chapatis, making mandazis. These are like little donuts without holes in them. And we would sell to people and would make a little bit of money. She saved every penny so she could take me to the best schools possible, way beyond our means, maybe 2-3 times beyond our means. But she also saved and started a little pig farm. So we were, you know, we bought male and female pigs, because, you know, you don't buy male and male, you know, female, right? And so these pigs multiplied. So before the beginning of every school term, we'd sell one or two to get, you know, some deposit on the tuition. And then I'd go back in the middle of the term and then probably sell something else. And that's how we went to school. For me, eventually I was able to get a scholarship and go to university. And because my mom had set the foundation of good schools. But what I realized when I came to the city, Kampala, is my friends that I used to kick ball around with, a lot of them remained in the village, you know, because they didn't have a similar opportunity where we had this little business that, you know, opened doors for me. And as a young adult, it was not lost on me. I was kind of like perturbed that people not having jobs or people not having little businesses and things like that was basically the difference maker between me and them. And so I think God began stirring in my heart then, even as a young adult then, that we could have better. You know, people could have more opportunity. And so that became really like the dream. I'm like, God, I really want to be at this intersection of job creation, of supporting entrepreneurs, of funding entrepreneurs and providing access to capital. And to my surprise, it's now, you know, almost 20 years and this dream has not left me. So that's kind of like the journey that gets me to starting Hinga.
That's a great story. And as I listen to it, it just strikes me how you describe a situation where you have lots of African kids in the village, all kind of going through the same challenges and so on. But the difference between you and where they ended up is that you effectively had a mentor in your mom, didn't you? And what it says to me is that there is hope, because while the conditions are not always the best and there's always suffering and all of that sort of thing, the ingenuity and the potential that's there is immense, and it can actually be unlocked with just the right keys. Is that a fair observation?
100%. I've heard it said before that talent is universal, but opportunity is not, right? So when I think in my case, you know, some of the smartest kids were my friends, but, you know, the opportunity just wasn't there for them. But because I had this opportunity, somehow, you know, I was able to escape that. And so that's at the heart of what we do, because we believe that a lot of people are talented, a lot of people are gifted, a lot of people have the resilience and the zeal and the hard work, but they just need opportunity to unlock them out of the situations that they are in.
Now, Andy, there are many businesses in your industry, many people who invest in entrepreneurs in Uganda and indeed across the continent. What is it about your approach that you consider to be redemptive, or should I say, gospel-driven?
That's a great question. People will be surprised, especially when we, you know, when you even talk to investors or even local professionals, like in the financial services, especially when we talk about like our rates that we give, that we lend to these businesses at. And they're like, oh, but you know, this is below market. That's usually the surprise for them. And we're like, yeah, that's exactly how we designed this, so that we are not extracting. So essentially, we basically charge as much as can help us to remain are in business, that we're able to serve, that we're able to open our doors the next day or the next year. But, you know, we are not profit driven. And don't get me wrong, I think profit is not a dirty word. Profit is a good word. You know, we have to run these, you know, businesses in a virtuous cycle. But it becomes a question of what is that profit for? What are you using that for? And so for us, you know, we've decided to leave some of that profit that we could take from businesses and not take it and leave it to them. It's basically almost like that whole concept of gleaning, right? If you remember, the Jewish would say, hey, do not take everything. Do not harvest everything. Leave some for the people to come and so that they're not going to go hungry. So that gleaning aspect of things, I think, is extremely redemptive. But of course, you know, in as much as we can and we are able, for us, we try to integrate scripture and what we believe to teach that to the entrepreneurs that we work with. Some of them, you know, whether it's in one-on-ones or others, collaborating with their other partner organizations so that they can plug in and get to learn more about the most important thing, which is basically our relationship with the Lord.
That's very good, Andy. And I love that perspective on profit. So profit is certainly not a dirty word, but neither does it mean taking absolutely everything that's on the table. We can leave some, and in a redemptive context, we can think about doing business in a way that leaves some money that others wouldn't for, say, the people that we're empowering. So I love that perspective. But Andy, moving on to our topic now, taking a long-term view, how much of what you do is driven by this perspective? And why would you say this is important, especially in a developing continent like ours?
We come from a very exciting, full continent, but by many forms broken. I mean, look, the greatest investor of all time is Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett does not invest in companies just for short-term outlooks. In fact, he says that, you know, he look at the potential of the company and he will invest for the long term. So the short-termism is essentially, I think, very opportunistic. I just don't see how that really is a great way of investing in things. And a friend of mine, he's actually like one of our investors, very young, but probably one of the most consequential now Christian investors. He's called Michael Arrieta. You know, so basically they buy companies, and what they do is like, we invest with no intention of ever selling the companies because they are just looking at the well-being of their employees, well-being for their investors even. And for people to invest in Africa, we have to come with that similar mindset. You know, if this kind of hit and run approach just leaves a lot of pain, it does not really grow people, does not grow companies, cannot grow communities and societies. You know, I'm so glad. I'm just blessed. I'm happy that, you know, God made me African. So I think like when I'm investing in thing here, I'm just investing in me. I'm investing in our future, in the future of our children, the future of our grandchildren, future of my friends and church and family. And that's the approach that we have to do here.
I hear that, Andy. And I was also just thinking as you were talking about how poverty in Africa is generational. And so any solutions or strategies to combat it also have to be generational, don't they? I mean, when you think about the potential entrepreneurs that you're looking at, it's not just the man or the young woman that's standing in front of you. You have to be thinking about how this impacts their children and their children's children, right?
Look, like you could not put it any better. I mean, you think of when scripture talks about, I will visit, you know, the saints to the, you know, third and whatever generations. I mean, it's multi-generational. So if our problem is that deeply rooted, you know, the solution needs to be equally, long-term focused. And so I couldn't put it in an apt way as you have. So yeah, so the solutions have to just focus on, you know, the second, third, fourth generations.
Right, right. And that's all well and good. But Andy, let's face it, we as human beings, and perhaps I could say particularly as Africans, I don't know if that's fair, but we do generally enjoy instant or at least short-term gratification. So what are some of the challenges you've faced in instilling that virtue of taking a long-term view with the entrepreneurs that you serve?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being honest, like in our kind of work, you know, liquidity is a challenge. And so places where you would want to place a bet on an entrepreneur for the long term, you just become constrained by just the sheer lack of cash, right? And so for us, that's something that we are constantly dealing with. You know, it's like, hey, you know, and sometimes obviously we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong, but definitely it affects the kind of impact we can leave, whether in scope, whether in scale. And so you find maybe you're serving less entrepreneurs than you should normally serve. I think for us, the biggest thing is having liquidity issues has definitely impacted on how many long-term investments. Well, if, you know, if right now, if we're talking about like equity, equity investments in companies that we can do. So that has totally affected ours. However, we've really done well, I think, when it comes to healthcare, all of that is really, really, really long-term investments that we make in that sector. And I think we're going to have some tremendous success and impact in that sector here.
I was just thinking as you were responding to that about the importance of narrative. See, because it's very easy as a young African to look at someone perhaps of European descent and see the house they're living in and the sort of wealth and the assets that they have and think, okay, I want to get into business so I can have that, you know, in about 5 or 6 years' time. And what I'm not seeing, though, is the generations behind that person that have gone into creating that asset base. And I know, of course, that we're touching here on the subject of historical injustice. But the point I'm making is that it's important to understand how long it takes to build something of significance. Is that something you talk to entrepreneurs about?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, but they say the best education is also how you basically by example, or how we are able to exemplify that at an institutional level ourselves. I think our entrepreneurs definitely see how we operate, because so it's almost like a community for us. You know, they're just not customers, they're clients. You know, we handhold and we get to see who they are, they get to see who we are, get into their lives and get into ours, and, you know, to the extent possible. I mean, we are like the most frugal, I think, organization, if you ask me, very lean. And we just come and share some of the things that we think have worked for us, and where we are hoping to go and where we've come from. And some of them get it, some don't. But I think we are the first generation maybe where things are beginning to change, where we're beginning to have these kinds of outlooks. Different. I mean, most of us, like, you know, if you're my age, 40 plus, you're probably taking care of your parents now, you know, because all they were working was just to barely get you out of school. You know, we are hoping that our kids will not become our social security, you know. But all of that was, you know, generation after generation, and hopefully then our kids will do better. And I hope that, you know, definitely things are better than, you know, they were 20 years or 40 years ago. So it's going to take time as whatever injustices are corrected or righted, and the hard work that we have to put in to just change how things are done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do share your hope and optimism for the continent. So finally, Andy, what encouragement would you like to share with fellow Christian business leaders when it comes to embracing our role as agents of restorative justice in society?
For me, the encouragement is just to know that we are all part of God's beautiful story. And I mean, we're just participants. We're actually, he just lets us participate. And to know, you know, that we just have to show up. Really, God does the work, if you ask me. But, you know, there's this scripture for me in Colossians that kind of like embodies all of that. It says, for in him all things were created. You know, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him, right? So, I mean, there's nothing new that you and I are creating. God is just allowing us to be part of his beautiful redemptive story, to show up and do what we need to be doing in the period that he's allowed us and given us. And that we all have a role to play. So no one plays a small or large role, really, you know, because it's kind of like how Paul talks about this, you know, to the church in Corinthians and in Corinth. And he's like, you know, we are one body with many members, you know. Yeah, and, you know, so there is no one larger. If a foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing?
Yeah.
If the whole body where an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. So we are, that's for me, that's a whole beautiful scripture, you know, when we read that, to show what kind of value that we bring to the kingdom, and that, you know, the world looks at success in many ways, but in God's kingdom, you know, we all make up this body and we have this role to play in the redemption story.
Yeah, well said. Well, Andy, thanks so much for your time and your story and your wisdom. I look forward to checking in on your progress sometime in the not too distant future.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here, and I look forward to connecting again. God bless.
Thanks and goodbye.
If you want a written resource that includes all the topics in this series, Please see the show notes to download our free Business and Justice booklet. Thank you for listening today. If you would like to hear more conversations on the topic of redemptive business in Africa, visit Ziwani's website at www.ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.